Good evening to you. It's Tuesday night. I'm Tom Lounges, and it's time for another edition of Midwest Beat, a program all about music and the people who make it. Well, if you love guitar heroes, you love hard rock guitar, instrumental greats, stick around. You're in for a real treat this evening. Live in studio with me, Northwest Indiana's own instrumental rock guitarist, Chris Boland. And Chris is going to feature songs from his new album, his debut album, Embers Alive. We're going to chat about rock guitar, rock heroes, share things about his personal musical journey, talk a little bit about marketing instrumental albums, and, well, just all sorts of things geared to guitars. So if you love guitar, you love rock and roll, and you love this show, then stick around because we've got Chris joining us and we'll feature some of his new music right after your headline. Lines here. To you, I'm Tom Lounges. It's time for Midwest Beat, a program all about music and people who make it. Tonight in studio, Northwest Indiana instrumental rock guitarist Chris Boland. Chris will spotlight songs from his new album, Embers Alive. We'll chat about rock guitar, talk about some of his influences, different styles of guitar. We'll share things about his personal journey into music, and we'll talk about the fact that he's not just a rock and roller. He studied at Berklee College of Music. He plays other instruments, including the cello. And, well, we're going to get to know Chris very well. But first, let's let the music do the talking. And features something off the new album, Embers Alive. This is Forge the Dream. Forge the Dream. That's brand new stuff. Chris Bolant is with us. He's a Northwest Indiana guitarist. Chris, good stuff there.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
This is an all-instrumental album, 9 songs. You've written all of them, correct?
Yeah, I wrote most of all of it. I did have a co-writer that wrote a few of the songs with me. But for the most part, I wrote everything on the album, including the drums, actually, too. So,
and you play everything except the drums, right?
Yeah, everything except the drums I played on there. And, yeah, I wrote pretty much everything. Like I said, the project actually started out with me and a friend. It was going to be like a band between ourselves, and we started writing the album like that. And then he ended up deciding a little bit along the way that he wanted to try to pursue, like, different, career with music as far as, like, you know, going with another band and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I grew up playing with him, so it wasn't a big deal. You know, I understood it, and I respected, you know, his decision with that. But he actually helped me write about 3 of the songs on there. He wrote some of the rhythm parts, but all the main melodies and everything I wrote. So
you were saying off air, you're 28 now. You started playing at age 8, so 20 years now you've had this guitar in your hand, basically.
Yep, 20 years, and yeah, started pretty young. It was just something I enjoyed right off the bat. I got into it because my dad played guitar, and I started playing with him, and just kept going with that as just a hobby to begin with, and started playing out with him probably around when I was 10 years old, and just kept going from there. I played cello in high school and all through school, actually. And
did your dad play, like, in the scene here? Is he part of the music community?
Yeah, he played in a band called The Breaks back in the 80s, and they played a lot of weddings and some bars, I guess, like that. But they played pretty consistently. But since then, I think they broke up in the early 90s. But since then, he just kind of played, like, acoustically out with another friend of his. But, like playing every weekend, but, you know, he played almost every day when I was growing up. So, I mean, it was something great to have in the house to play music every day. So,
Were you naturally drawn to the guitar? Because of seeing him play, or?
Yeah, yes, so. You know, I actually did. I started out on piano. I actually wanted to play drums, first of all. Now I'm thinking way back. I wanted to be a drummer. And my mom goes, you know, if you want to get into the music itself, you probably should start on piano, because she thought that would be good to start on. So
It's a good jump point, because if you, well, Dan, you can chime in on this. If you start on piano, you pretty much can learn to play almost anything.
Gets you that theory background, which is kind of transcends into everything else. It's where I play the drums, and I also started really young on piano, and I think that's the best way to get into music.
Yeah.
This is Dan Clark, our engineer here. For those of you that aren't regulars of the show, that are just Chris fans tuning in for the first time, Dan is a professional musician when he's not running the board here at Lakeshore, and I'm the only non-musician here, I guess.
But you know so much about music, so it all balances out.
But it's interesting, because I recently just did a piece on Salvador Santana, Carlos's son, and he did not want to be, you know, pick up the guitar. He wanted to somehow forge a new way, but still be like his dad, and he wound up playing piano. And now he's doing the piano, the hip-hop thing, and he still doesn't play guitar. He plays almost everything else. I just didn't know if that was the normal case as far as if people try to find their own field, or if it just is something in the genes that guitar and your family are meant to be together.
Yeah, well, I mean, I wasn't, particularly drawn to the piano. I wasn't like, I seen the piano from a young age and said, I want to play that, or heard something with that. It's just kind of like, I wanted to get into music. And I wanted to play drums first of all. And that's kind of when I was 5 or 6 years old, my mom goes, well, you got to take piano lessons first. That's kind of what you do. You know, you don't go, no, I'm going to have the drum set. No, you can't go out and buy a drum set. So, I kind of started on piano, and actually my teacher actually had a drum set that she let me mess around on afterwards after piano lessons. So I kind of did that.
Still got those drums in there.
Yeah. So that's somewhere that's actually, like I said, I wrote the drums for the album, and I'm not like a real, drum player. You know, I guess I couldn't play those parts myself, but I know I have enough of an ear for drums that I was able to hear, like, hey, I want this drum part here, enough knowledge of it where I could actually did it on MIDI keyboard.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I just had the demos of the songs, and I just kind of went through and just
so you could
them
create
on
the drum sounds on the keyboard.
Yep,
then.
And that's how I did it, and that's then that's how the real drummer learned it for the album.
It's a lot of really cool double bass drum stuff going on in there, which I think would be, as a non-drum player, that's really cool that you were able to communicate that, because a lot of times I've had people like, oh, why don't you play this beat, and it's like, I don't, they're like speaking it to me, and I'm like, I don't know what you're like, what does that mean?
I definitely had to get past some of those language barriers as far as talking to the drummer, you know, trying to communicate that. But in the end, I got it through, and basically if he heard it, if I had it on the you know, the song where he could listen to it. He learned it from that. So, but yeah, definitely had to get through some of that stuff. But.
Yeah, it's always a struggle, but it sounds it translated great out on the
yeah.
record.
Thanks a lot.
There's 9 songs on this. You wrote or co-wrote all of them. How long of a process in the writing? I mean, they always say you have your whole life to make your first album. Are these recently written? Are these things you started back in high school?
Yeah.
Or a little of everything?
Yeah, these songs actually were written all for this album. So,
okay.
Yeah, it took from start to finish about a little 2.5 years. I started writing this whole album back in October of 2012 with my friend. I mentioned his name was Billy Cox, by the way, and just wanted to give a shout out to him because he really
not the
helped
Billy
me.
Cox that played with
not,
Hendrix.
No, not him. Okay. I've had that question before. No, another Billy Cox. He plays with a band called The Fall Four, but they're doing really good, and they play like, you know, the Warped Tour and that kind of stuff, but he's trying to do something with them. So yeah, check them out, The Fall Four. And yeah, so he helped me begin writing it. Like I said, I started off with him in his house and just writing these songs, and for about 3 or 4 months we worked together on the songs. And I got about maybe 3 or 4 songs in with him, and he decided, you know, he wanted to go a different way, like I said. So I go, okay, so I'm going, well, I'm not stopping here. I'm going to keep going with the album and finish it up. And over the next year, I finished writing it. And I actually, at the same time I was working, I got into an electrician's apprenticeship program. So I was working like full time doing that, and I was come home and like work on it about an hour a day, you know. So it's about all I could.
It was a labor of love then.
Yeah, I was like, I'm gonna finish this. I just had it in my head. I've been wanting to do it for a while. I guess I could talk a little bit about the, you know, it's called Embers Alive, because I mean, Embers Alive means I had this idea to do like an album like this for a while, or make like an original music album, probably since I was in high school. So I kind of went to college and did some stuff there. I went to IU for a year, and then I went to Berklee College of Music for another year and a half, but I didn't graduate from either one of those. And I came back, and I kind of played with a handful of different bands after that. And, you know, I don't know what happened in there. It's like I still like doing my original stuff, but I guess I just got, you know, busy doing other things with music and kind of just lost sight of it a little bit, but it was still there in my head, obviously, because it, once I got some money doing work, and again, like I said, in the electrician's apprenticeship, I started going, man, I want to do something with this, and, you know, I'd love to make a professionally done album. So that's why I started working on it. And, yeah, and I started recording in beginning of 2014, recorded all last year, the album. Mm-hmm. About every week I went and did something with it, and recorded in Lombard, Illinois, with a guy named Wes Kozakowski, and he actually worked on one of the albums for the Plain White Tees,
okay.
Like one of their first albums before they got really big, but he helped them get discovered, basically. But I heard another album he did with a band called The Scissors, and I go, man, this sounds really professional. And I go, I just was curious about it, and I went and checked it out online, and I just found out who did it. I thought maybe it was done in California or Los Angeles or New York, some like big studio, but it was like right here in Lombard, Illinois. So I go, I gave him a call, I give him an email, and he goes, yeah, I'd love to work with you. So that's how I ended up working with him. And he's the guy that worked with me the closest on the album. He was, you know, really gave some pretty good insight when I was recording everything, and he was really good to work with. So I mean, he's the reason everything sound quality wise where it's at. And actually recorded all the guitars in his basement of his home studio, and guitars and bass, and the drums were recorded in a studio that's now just closed down, I heard, which is horrible. It's called Chromatic Studios, and that was in Crystal Lake, Illinois. But we went there to do the drums just because it was a bigger, better acoustics for it, and it, you know, they had like 16 mics, and it was really like professional. But yeah, and his name, the guy who did the drums was named Trevor Warren, and he did a really good job. But he's just a busy guy, and I'd love to have him playing with me right now, but he's just getting married, and he lives like about an hour and a half away in Illinois, and he's a little too busy to play with me live. But
where in Illinois?
He lives in I'm trying to think, because I didn't go to his house to practice, but in the same area of Lombard.
Okay, I grew up in that area, so I was just curious.
Yeah, in that same area over there. I'm sorry, I can't remember, because I didn't actually go to his house to practice. But yeah, he did a great job on it, I think, and he's, you know, I'm really happy I got live drums in it, because I mean, like I said, I did everything on, to begin with, for the demos, I did it on MIDI keyboard. So I had like the drum parts coming out of my keyboard, and that's how I did the demos up initially. He listened to those demos and learned everything by ear, and he did a, you know, great job on it, I think. And got live drums on it, and that's way better than I wouldn't have wanted it to have just the computer-generated drums on it. So.
Well, we're going to find out next when Chris switched over from keys and his passion for drums and took up guitar. We're going to find out who some of his heroes were and influences. But first, let's get back to the album. A track called Celestial. Is there a story behind this one before we play it? Is there any special
No, this is just not a real special story. I just kind of, some of my songs, I'm just jamming, and I might hear a riff that I'm playing on. I go, it catches my ear more so than anything else, and I always record it on my phone or some kind of recording device, even if I, you know, think it might be something. I listen back later, and I, you know, determine later at night after I'm out of my playing mode, kind of listen to it from like a listener's perspective. I go, okay, this is pretty cool, and that's how I got the beginning riff of this, and I just kind of developed it from there.
So, all right, yep. This is Celestial. We'll be back with Chris on the other side. Celestial on the Lake Shore. I'm Tom Lounges. This is Midwest Beat. That's Chris Boland. It's off Chris's new album, which is Embers Alive. And Chris, how long ago did this album come out?
It came out on May 24th of this year. I did a release show at Chicago Street Theater in Valparaiso, Indiana. And that's where I released it at, decided to release it. And then I think about a week after that, everything got released online. And it's on iTunes. It's available on my website, www.chrisboland.com. And you can buy it on there. You can buy it on iTunes. You can go to Amazon Music has it, Google Play. I did it through a company called TuneCore that distributed it to all those different things. It's on Spotify, Rhapsody, the stream on there if anybody wants to stream it. And
you also sell it at gigs, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I always bring CDs to the gigs. And I always have those with me. And if anybody wants to purchase them there, you can get a physical copy of the CD. You can also order the CD on my website. I'll ship it out to whoever wants it. And
speaking of gigs, this Friday you're at a very legendary club downtown.
Yep.
Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I'm at Original Mothers in Chicago at 26 West Division Street. I go on at 9 p.m. And there's a couple other bands playing that night, but I opened up the whole night. And it should be a good time. I can play for a half hour, and I'm just excited to get out in Chicago and trying to spread my music around. I'm going to try to play as many places as I can, and I'm really looking forward to it. So should be cool.
Recently played Elbow Room, too. That's another iconic room.
Yeah.
Small, but still a club that's been around forever and has had many big names.
Yeah, that was another place I had in my head that I kind of wanted to play. I know they have a lot of beginning bands that start off to play there. So I kind of, you know, I sent them my music. They got right back to me, and I was able to play there a couple weeks ago. And, yeah, I'm just hoping to kind of keep doing that as much around Northwest Indiana and Chicago as I can. I plan on trying to just build a local following for myself. And hopefully if I can get enough people liking me around here, then I can hopefully take that to the next level. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of what my plan is with everything. So,
are you finding being from Northwest Indiana and the clubs here tend to want cover bands? And I know you play in a cover band, a great cover band, Zodiac. Mm-hmm. But you're going to Chicago to play your original music. Are you finding that's kind of a necessity?
I feel like it is, just because, like you said, I don't feel like there's that many places around locally to they cater to local music, or original music, I guess. Yeah, like you said, it's like a lot of cover bands and bars. I feel like that's like the main scene around here. So I feel like I have to go to Chicago. You know, I'd love to just stay around here and do it. Mm-hmm. You know, believe me, because it's kind of a lot of tolls going up to Chicago and in traffic. But you know, I mean, I'm happy that at least I have a city like that close enough to do it at. You know, I could be worse. I could be in the middle of
Iowa
or something with nothing around. So
corn,
yeah,
that'd be terrible.
I have to drive an hour up to Chicago. It's not a problem. So
now we did mention you are in a great cover band out here that's been around a while. Zodiac, Jill and Mark, good friends of mine over the years. Actually, the other ones that turned me on to your music. Are you guys playing out a lot? Is that taking a lot of time that normally you would be using to promote your original stuff? Are you finding a conflict now that you're trying to do both?
I mean, this is definitely something I thought about when I joined them. I joined them back earlier in the year, I guess actually later last year, but we didn't start playing out till February of this year. But yeah, it was something I thought about, but you know, I just try to balance it out. I spend a little time learning songs for them. We're learning new songs every week, and I spend some time on their stuff, learning it. And I'm the type guy, I've learned songs since I've been playing since I was 8 years old and learning songs, so it usually doesn't take up too much of my time. I'm pretty professional about learning the songs and coming to practice and knowing what I'm going to do, so it's really not that much of a hindrance, I feel like, in as far as getting in the way of what I'm trying to do with my original, mm-hmm. original stuff, so... I mean, I really enjoy playing out with them. I enjoy playing music in general, so it's something that I think it's good for me to like kind of let up on, you know, concentrating so much on my original stuff, which is kind of really serious to me. To like, okay, I'm gonna go have fun and play, you know, some cover songs and have a good time. And they're great musicians and great people, right. And I love playing with them. And we're playing about every. I've been playing at least 3 times a month, but. Starting the last 2 weeks, we're playing the next like 5 weekends, I think, in a row, and our 6 shows in the next 5 weekends. We're playing one on Labor Day week, and we're playing one on Saturday and Sunday at Lake Station Fest. We're playing on Sunday, but go to Zodiac 69. You can see all of our Zodiac69.com. You can see all the shows we have coming up, but it's just party rock. We play Bon Jovi and Guns N' Roses, and we'll try to play newer stuff. We'll play like Pink and you know, play that funky music, anything to get people out on the dance floor having a good time, you know, for their Saturday night. So it's having a great time. I have a great time playing with them.
This album, Embers Alive, is all instrumental, as we've mentioned. Was it intended to be instrumental? You mentioned starting it with a project with Billy Cox, and was it geared to be an instrumental type album, or did it become this because of the situation?
Yeah, I always started out to be instrumental, I guess. I made some songs back in high school I made one song that was instrumental. I guess made a handful of them. I'm sorry, but I made a handful before that were instrumental. And I guess from the beginning of this, I don't really know. We were just making music. And I think at the beginning, maybe that option was open. If we came across a singer that would want to work with us, then we'd go that route. But especially after he left, I just go, you know, I'm just going to stick to what I know, playing guitar. I've never studied vocals. I've never done lead vocals hardly at all other than for, you know, just a few songs here and there. So it's not like I feel like that's really my forte. So I kind of just stuck with what I know, and I decided I'm just going to try to do this instrumental. And I know some of my favorite guitarists are instrumental guitarists. So
let's talk about some of those. And you mentioned at 8 years old you started playing music, and you started with piano, dabbled with the drums. When did you officially pick up the guitar?
I officially picked up the guitar when I was 8 years old.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It was all the same year.
No, I started piano probably about 2 years before.
Okay.
Yeah, so I did that for about probably like a year and a half, and then I didn't like it. I said I wanted to quit the lessons. And then my grandpa, Bolin, actually got me a little kiddie acoustic guitar. And that was, I don't know, sat in my room for a while. And when I was growing up, my dad used to play every day. You know, he'd be sitting out. When he gets home from work, he'd just pick up his guitar and just start playing. He just loves playing music. And finally, like one day, I just picked up my guitar, and I go, you know, can I play with you? And you know, he goes, yeah, sure. And he taught me E minor chord to Rockin' in the Free World. And once I hit that chord, and, you know, I was actually to hear it within a song. It wasn't like I picked up a guitar, and I'm just in my room alone. It's like I got to hit that chord and feel like I was playing a song, even though I wasn't playing the whole thing, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was really cool. I think that hooked me from the start, you know. And he's really enthusiastic about playing music, so it was always a fun thing with him. It wasn't like, you know, I got to study every day on music and it became like a chore. It was like learn songs and we're gonna have fun playing them, and you can be yourself, and you know, kind of. It wasn't like really strict with playing the songs. You know, you play them how they should be played, but when it came to the solos and that kind of stuff, once I started learning scales and all that kind of thing, that stuff where I could solos, like I could kind of do my own thing. I was always like encouraged to kind of make up stuff, I guess, rather than just follow everything note for note. But I learned that later on. I learned how to do that, that I could had a pretty good ear, and I could learn stuff by ear a lot. So I learned like solos by a Crazy Train solo by Randy Rhoads. I learned that by ear. My Sharona, the solo for that, I learned that by ear. And I started realizing I can hear these notes and, you know, figure it out kind of with the whatever I had learned already from lessons and that kind of stuff. Because I did actually take lessons about a year, I think about 2 years after I started playing. I started taking lessons locally just from private instructors. I've taken lessons from Front Porch Music before. And
did the public school system have any part in this? Were you a part of the school department?
Yeah, I was. In middle school, I started playing the cello, and I played cello all through junior high and high school. So that was always – it was fun. It's just, like I said, I just love playing music, and anything just to play music every day in school, I'd love to do that. So I ended up picking cello, and it was fun. I actually had – my high school teacher was really good about having me play guitar with the orchestra. She let me play on numerous occasions with the guitar, so I was actually able to incorporate that with the orchestra too.
That's nice. You know, guitar in high school, they don't really have many guitars for some reason. They don't really – feature have like guitar lessons and stuff. I never knew why they did that. Yeah. They chose not to feature that.
Yeah, you know, I don't understand really why. I don't know. It's kind of like just shunned a little bit. It's like, oh, here's the proper instruments, and you know,
yeah,
but
the guitar, a trombone,
right? Yeah, no guitar. I mean, no drum set. It's all percussion,
marching drums. Marching
marching. That's it. Marching in like you know, orchestra stuff.
Well, your style, as we're hearing here, is very rooted in classic rock. You mentioned Randy Rhoads. You're 28 years old. How did you come to embrace these earlier guitar icons, and who do you think has impacted you most? Who did you first gravitate to? I'm hearing maybe a little Vinnie Moriner, maybe even a little Yngwie Malmsteen. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of speed in what you're doing without overplaying.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's one of the. I'm glad you said that, because that's what I truly just try to focus on, writing what's good for the song. I don't, not to knock any of those guitarists that play really fast a lot, because that's definitely where I've got a lot of my influences from. Yngwie Malmsteen was a huge influence, and Steve Vai, Joe Satriani, Eric Johnson, all those type guys. Just technically how good they are in guitars, like, just been was a huge influence on me, and I've, you know, definitely spent time trying to learn a lot of their stuff over the years. But as far as coming down to what I personally like, I think I really just like good songs, you know, more so than just the progressive part of it. So I guess if I had to put it one way, I'd rather listen to like AC/DC over like a complex Steve Vai song when I'm just want to jam out. But when I go to listen and respect the musicianship, you know, then I totally respect Steve Vai, and I can listen to it as a musician and respect it and like it. But at the end of the day, like when it comes down to my music, I want to make songs that almost anybody can just put on and hopefully enjoy in some way, you know, rather than just from a musician's standpoint. So I try to never lose focus, I guess, of getting too crazy as far as thinking about, oh, I got to just impress all the musicians. You know, I try to just make fun songs that people will hopefully enjoy, anybody, if they play music or not. So that, I guess that being said, as far as guitarists that I really like I just named those like virtuoso guitarists, kind of Yngwie Malmsteen and Steve Vai. I got into those guys when I first started taking lessons, I'd say, from Front Porch Music. I kind of started to get more in the technical route of knowing all those guitarists. I took it from a guy named Mike Ferry.
I know Mike.
Okay, cool. Yeah, he was really, really cool. And he always would tell me to, you know, anything you want to learn any week, just bring in and we can work on that, and we'll work on something that he's giving too. So it was kind of kept me interested, you know. And I really liked his style of teaching. So
what I like about what I'm hearing here, and you're talking about the technical side, but I'm also hearing a passion in there too. And when I think of passion guitar players, I'm thinking of Ronnie Montrose, Robin Trower, Rory Gallagher, people like that that have more the bluesy side, but still the technique. Even Tony Iommi.
Yeah.
Who's got the blues groove to it. But there's a lot of passion. They're not playing a million notes a minute. You're doing kind of both. It's almost like a mashup of those styles. Are any of those players influential?
Yeah. Tony Iommi, definitely. Randy Rhodes, Michael Schenker from UFO. All those classic guitarists. I've had a moment with, you know, any kind of big guitarist at one point, you know. Like Steve Ray Vaughan, you probably don't hear much of that in there, but he's great. Jimi Hendrix, I love all those guys. And Eddie Van Halen, of course.
I can hear Van Halen in there.
Yeah, and I really just like hard rocking stuff. Like I said, AC/DC, stuff that just rocks. That's why I kind of try to make like the template for my songs be. That is to rock really hard and have hopefully be listenable by anybody else, and have good melody. And like you said, I do like those faster guitars, so I want to throw some of that stuff in there. And I guess that's how I try to make my music different from like classic rock bands. I try to like take some of the newer influences and infuse it with what I think is good about the older stuff, which is mm-hmm. just writing great songs, I feel like, and try to influence some more progressive elements into it. So without getting too crazy, because from my standpoint, guys like Yngwie Malmsteen and Steve Vai have taken guitar, I feel like, technically, and as crazy, as fast as you can play on there, about as far as it can go.
Right.
He already plays every song like a million miles an hour. If I did that, then you'd have just another guitarist, I feel like, that plays that same style. And I'm not trying to copy anybody. So I feel like I want to have that faster element available in my arsenal of licks, I guess, but I don't want to like overdo it. Because then they're going to start, people, I feel like somebody would say, oh, that Jesus sounds like Yngwie Malmsteen or somebody else. So,
well, something else that's unique, too, as we were talking off air about, is your longest song on here is 5 minutes. And usually the guitar shredders are just self-indulgent. I mean, they just go on and on and on.
Yeah.
You keep a rein on it. You have fun. You let it go. You show what you can do, and you bring it right back home. And I think that's a unique... Dan, you work in a lot of this kind of music where it can get overindulgent in some of the jazz sides.
Some of the jazz sides? Speaking of rock guys, you were talking about learning a Neil Young song. I think I love Neil Young, but I think he has a tendency sometimes when he solos to go on for like 5 minutes and it's like, oh yeah, I was singing, what song are we playing again? Yeah. But definitely.
I mean, yeah, that's definitely some of the things, I guess. Like, I've heard this from a lot of good bands, that they just try to make the music that's not out there yet that they'd like to hear. You know, I heard that from AC/DC, I think, and from quite a handful of different bands over the years. So that's kind of what I've done. I hear things that like that bother me about some music, like, that just keep going on and feel like, why is this song keep jamming? Like, one of the songs in particular, I don't want to bash people, but not that I personally know them, but... like Elton John on Benny, keep saying Benny.
Benny and the Jets.
Benny. Just
it's like, end it already.
I know. I'm like, I liked it like the first 50 times you said it, and then I'm just like, stop. You know, so.
One of those Neil Young tunes, Everybody Knows This Is Nowhere.
Yeah.
I think that one kind of drones on a little bit, but
Yeah, well, so let's play something that doesn't drone on. Yeah, this is a short one. This is the title track, Embers Alive. And you had mentioned that basically the embers of this album were still burning, but they weren't flaming because you had so many projects going, and you finally finished it. Where in the order of these songs did that come? Was that like the first song, the last song?
Oh, Embers Alive, the song? That was one of the last songs I actually finished. This one did have lyrics to begin with, believe it or not. I don't know why this happened, but it normally doesn't happen. But when I first came up with the song, I just kind of had some lyrics to it, and I just wrote them down real quick. And it was actually called "I'm on Fire for You," and I just had lyrics to it and everything. And then I go, you know, I don't even know if I was going to use it for the album. And I actually took out the lyrics and I worked on guitar parts to come up with it. And I actually wrote this pretty far into the recording process, came up with the guitar parts for it. And that's how I came up with it. So I kind of came up with the guitar parts, main melody you're hearing, within probably a couple weeks for this song.
All right. This is Embers Alive.
We'll be right back.
Alive. That's the title track of Chris's new album. This is Midwest Beat. I'm Tom Lounges. This program is all about music and the people who make it. And Chris Bolin's made some great music here. 9 original songs on the Embers Alive album. It came out in May. You can find it online at his website, which is chrisbolin.com.
Yep, chrisbolin.com, chrisbolin.com. And it's on there, and you can buy it there. You can buy a order CD or do the digital download. It's also on iTunes and Amazon Music, Google Play, and it's available to stream on Spotify and Rhapsody. So there you go. There's
and
a rundown.
There you go. Any brick and mortar stores in the area, and like Front Porch Stall, any place like that, S&J Stereo?
No, you know, I need to work on that. You know, I need to get it in some of those stores, local stores, see if they'll carry it and everything, but it's not in any of those stores quite yet, no.
I mean, I enjoy listening to the stream while I'm in my office, you know, put the other computer on, listen to stuff, but when it comes to like kicking back in my chair with a cold one, it's like I want to put preferably vinyl, but I'll take a CD if I have to.
Definitely.
But to have physical, you know?
Yeah, and you can look at all the pictures, and I know there's some, looks like you did a photo session for this one. It's a really cool album cover.
Thanks a lot. Yeah,
it's got a kind of retro look. You get the white t-shirt and the black leather jacket, kind of James Dean-ish.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, that guy did a great job. His name's Stephen Kowalski. Went up to Chicago and found out after the shoot they actually did my sister's engagement photos.
Oh, wow.
So that was pretty crazy. But, yeah, he did a great job. Check him out, Stephen Kowalski.
How many guitars do you have? I always have to ask this because I know when you go to, like, Nugent's house, he's got, like, 2 rooms. And guitar people are...
Guitars and probably a lot of animal heads, too.
Yeah, that too. But most guitarists I know are like, they have their favorites for certain songs or certain things, but they won't play it, like, all the time. Are you like that? Do you have like a bunch of guitars that you use for certain sounds?
Yeah, I do have. Yeah, I have probably about 5 or 6 of them, I'd say. Yeah, so I use 3 on the album. And what's crazy is I didn't use this guitar at all on it.
But your karaoke, the one on the cover? Okay.
But I did spend a lot of...
That's a white...
White Paul Reed Smith Santana. But I took it to the photo shoot, and we were taking the pictures. I just go, wow, it looks so great. This is before I actually started recording the album. So
I like the headstock on that. That's kind of cool looking.
Yeah, it's really neat. But on the album, I used the SG Angus Young Signature. I actually bought for an AC/DC band I played in.
Very cool.
It's called a Godan Velocity guitar. And I used an older Les Paul. So, yeah, that's...
Wow, the Les Paul would sound... I don't picture that as being like a very heavy rock kind of sound.
Yeah, I felt like it lended like a little bit of an old school flavor to it. At certain points, I wanted to use it.
Yeah.
So like that last one, I played all the lead parts on a Les Paul.
Oh, but very cool.
I would picture when you're playing like a million notes a minute kind of stuff, it's a flying V. You know, it's just
I always picture someone
with a flying V is playing that. I don't picture a Les Paul because like you said, it's kind of old school.
Yeah, you think like for jazz or something like that, but...
Yeah,
I guess those kinds of guitars are very versatile, too. You can play some, put some distortion on it and get crazy.
Go.
Yeah,
have fun.
Yeah.
You mentioned that last song, Embers Alive, the title track, originally started with lyrics. Have you thought maybe in the future of doing a lyrical album?
I have put some thought into that. If I was going to personally do it, then I'd need to spend some more time on singing, and that's something I'd have to really spend time on.
Or get someone like Jill Field.
Yeah, that's right.
She's got a beautiful voice.
Yes, she's got a great voice. I don't know. I mean, that's something that when I start making the next album, I'll keep in mind and decide what path I'm going to go down, I guess, once I start getting to that certain point. But I kind of, when I was making this, I'm like, oh, you know, it's just going to be instrumental. I wasn't, like, bummed about it, I would say, but it was kind of like, you know, it's nice to have vocals, but after it's all done, I'm kind of thinking, you know, this is pretty cool. It's something different that a lot of people don't really do. So
and
I
it's
kinda,
all you. Your fingerprints are on everything here.
Yeah, that's one cool thing about it. I can kind of control everything on it as far as...
The only bad thing about that is that if something goes south, all the fingers point at you. You can't point fingers elsewhere. It's like, I did it all. Sorry.
That's right.
But
that's
don't think you have a problem with this. This is a great album, Chris. And I know how hard it is to market original music in Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland as it is, as an indie artist. It's got to be twice as hard to be able to market an instrumental because it's more of a niche.
Yeah.
Especially by yourself.
Yeah, how have you been doing this? I mean, the word's starting to get out on you now, and it's only been since May. And I'm seeing more and more on Facebook. I'm hearing from other musicians about you.
Well, yeah, I'm just trying to, like you said, I'm just trying to get myself out there as much as possible. That's my my main plan of attack is just get myself out there, get myself known, because if nobody knows about my music, then I can't find any fans, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm just trying to get it out there, and hopefully the people that would enjoy it hear it, and I can get fans that way. And once I kind of find, I guess, if I start finding my niche, then I'll kind of try to cater to that somehow as far as where I'm playing, I guess. But, I mean, there's a lot of good venues in Chicago, original venues, and I'm just hoping to get people start hearing my music and hearing my name and liking me and coming to my shows, and hopefully I can do it that way. And I feel like if it gets out there, then the people that like it will hear it and come to it. So,
you know, this Friday, again, August 28th is Friday, 9 to 9:30, the Original Mothers, 26 West Division Street in Chicago, legendary venue. I remember going there many, many, many years ago, and it's still a hot spot down on the Division stretch there. Free admission for this show, right?
Yep, yeah, it's free admission. Yeah, sorry, I didn't mention that. Yes, free admission, and actually Sweetwater Brewery will be there, and they're going to have free samples of their beer and their draft beer on tap, and it's sponsored by them, and there's going to be a couple other bands. After me, this thing is Dogfish and the Cat Stars. I want to say
Dogfish and Cat Stars.
I used to play in that band, Catfish and the Dog
Catfish.
Stars.
Catfish and the Dog.
Yeah, I know exactly.
Sorry,
that's Mike Morgan. Whoa. Yeah, that's they're a great band. You'll enjoy them.
You played in them?
Yeah, for a little bit. We and then the guitar player Mike and I and the bass player in the band I play in, Bonzo Turks, went and formed another band, and we've been very busy, so that kind of stopped, and he got Catfish and the Dog Stars together again. So they've been playing out recently.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow. What a small world. That's
they're
awesome.
A great band. So it'll be a fun night.
Cool.
Fun night of
yeah.
music.
Got them, and then there's another band after them called Gramps the Vamp.
Oh, they're another very, very. They're like a funk, soul funk band out.
I did have a chance to check them out. They're pretty cool. Yeah.
Any other dates coming up for you?
You know, sadly, that's the only one I have right now. I've been just working on trying to get other shows, but sometimes it takes a while for people to get back to me. So if you go to chrisbullant.com, I keep all that updated. You can also find me on Facebook, on Twitter, Instagram, and I have a YouTube channel, too. You just type in Chris Bullant. You should be able to find me on any of those.
I just pulled your website up here a few minutes ago, and it's a really nice-looking website. For local artist, you know, it's much higher quality than I'm used to seeing. Yeah. Do you do it yourself? Do you have someone that does it?
It's with a site called Bandzoogle, and they just it's
nice.
It's actually pretty cheap, believe it or not, to just have that, and it make it real easy for me to set up. And I, you know, like I said, I spent time getting good pictures, and that's my whole thing when I went out and did this. I go, I want this to be as professional and as good looking as possible. So I think of it as kind of like an application to becoming a rock star. Hopefully, you know. So if somebody in the actual, you know, rock star world that wants to help me out sees me, I feel like I have to have my product, I guess, per se, like already like there. Like somebody see me and go, you know, man, he's got it going on. You know, I don't want him to look like I'm just playing in my bedroom or something.
Right.
Like, I want it to look professional and for the fans and for anybody else who's looking at it right now, because I'm trying to go someplace with it, and my goal is to go become as huge as I can possibly be. You know, it's not just to play locally and do that. So, I mean, I want to make a living off of it eventually. So I'm trying to be as professional as I can about it. And, that's just how
I'm thinking
about
you have to make a living, because I'm looking at the stacks of Marshall amps you have. I'm on your website. I went to the video side. You have a wall of Marshalls.
It must be so
that's
much fun.
Check that out, Dan.
I see. Yeah, I can see that from here.
Is that at Chicago Street Theater?
Yeah.
These videos?
I'll give another shout out to a friend that helped me with that. His name's Gene Eaton. He's actually a friend of my dad's, but he's just a big music collector, and he actually had those amps. And I got contact with him for the show. I was like, can I borrow some of those? Because that looks so cool to have.
That looks very cool.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So you can see these videos again on Chris's website, and that site again?
Yeah, it's chrisbullant.com.
There you go. You can find all sorts of stuff there. You can get wallpaper of you. Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. I don't have any wallpaper of me.
That's something we should get, Tom.
We should.
I think a Midwest Beat
wallpaper
would be very nice.
All right.
I'd put it on my computer.
let's play another song. We're getting tight on time here. You wanted to play Graven. Yeah, that's the opening track on this. Is there a reason, sequencing-wise, you put that as the opener?
I thought it was a good opening song, just from a musical standpoint. It's kind of a little bit more up-tempo. I thought it was a good one to kind of start the kickstart the record off. That's about the only reason I put it first.
All right. So. We'll be back to say goodbye to Chris on the other side of this. Graven.
Mm-hmm.
Graven. That's the opening track on Embers Alive. Chris, this is a great album again, out since May. Where do we get it?
You can get it on my website at chrisbullant.com. You can find it on iTunes, Amazon Music, Google Play. You can buy it from any of those websites. And yeah, I mean, it's out there. So if you want to go get it, go to those websites.
And I think they should get it.
Yeah.
ChrisBullant.com. Videos there. Again, you can see him play live. You can see that stack of marshals we were talking about. And you, of course, play in Zodiac locally. Is there another Zodiac date this weekend, maybe?
Yeah, we're playing on this Saturday at Bottoms Up Lounge in Lansing, Illinois.
Are they still a late-night place?
I think we start at 9, actually.
Okay.
I don't want to say that for sure, but it's either 9 or 10. If you go to our website, zodiac69.com, you can see the schedule and see exactly when we start. We played there once before, had a good time, and yeah, if you go, we're playing next 5 weeks, I think, every Saturday, so yep.
Well, that music means we're down to less than a minute. Any shout-outs to anybody? Anyone you need to acknowledge? Moms, dads, girlfriends?
Yeah, I'll do that.
Pet dogs, yeah. Anything?
Yeah, I'll thank my mom and dad for always supporting me. I appreciate that. Without them, I wouldn't have been able to make this album, definitely. So I want to say thanks to them. Thanks to my sister and her husband for always supporting me. I want to say thanks to everybody that was involved with the album. Wes Kozakowski, Trevor Warren, Billy Cox, off the top of my head, Stephen Kowalski, photography, and...
All right.
Yes, about it. I want to thank you, Tom Lounges, for having me on here. I appreciate you having me on the show and getting the word out.
All right.